Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Back at Oak Lawn. Rick Amerley, Steve Bick with you, and Hammer. So much fun yesterday. Didn't necessarily, you know, I knew it would be nice. Didn't know fully what to expect, what was added on. Of course, we haven't been here in two seasons, essentially. So just blown away by what has been accomplished here.
Well, I thought we were going to get the 50-cent tour, and we got the $5 tour. I mean, when you work here, you walk through the casino, you see the hotel, you've seen the new convention center, but haven't really got the gist of the whole thing. And I was telling you yesterday that the new name here, obviously, is the Oak Lawn Racing Casino Resort. And when I was a kid and we would travel, and we'd stay in, you know, hotels or motels, and I would ask my father, I go, Dad, what's the difference between a hotel and a motel? And he would tell me, well, a motel, you pretty much park your car in front of your room and go in, and a hotel, you park and you go up and get to your room. And then a little few years later, I saw something called a resort, and I asked him, what's a resort? And he said, well, a resort is a place you travel to and you never have to leave when you get there. And I tell you what, it always stuck with me, right? And I don't know if that's the meaning in the dictionary, but if there's ever a place that you want to come and have fun and gamble and do whatever, it's Oak Lawn right now. It's a resort. From what we saw yesterday, besides the racetrack, you've got restaurants, from delis to five-star restaurants called the Bugler. You've got this hotel, which we'll talk about in length. But we got to see some of the rooms that overlook the track. And let me tell you, a nice view. You've got a casino that has fully expanded, that has everything, you know, craps, roulette, blackjack, has a nice sports book in it. And it's got a pool. It's got everything that you would ever want that you would never have to leave. So I don't know what impressed you the most, but what I enjoyed and I saw, and you mentioned a little, touched on a little bit earlier, was the horse theme throughout the whole property. And I forgot to mention the event center. There's a room that you can have little concerts, intimate concerts for about 1,200 people. They're having a banquet there tonight called the Ice for Ice.
Where all the women, there's ice cubes, and there's either an actual diamond or a cubic zirconia embedded in the ice cubes. That everybody's going to get one, and then they have to go to, I guess they've been doing this for a few years, they have to go downtown to one of the jewelry stores to then get their prize checked out.
Right. It used to be held at the Arlington, I believe, and now it's here. But you don't have to leave the property and have a ball. So it's fantastic. But the horse theme throughout everything was what kind of kept it together. That, you know what, the base of this is Oak Lawn Park racing. It's all about horse racing, and the extras were just built around the track, not the other way around.
I put up the pictures with Ron. I put up the picture of the trophy case, and I really should put up. I've got a couple of other pictures. The Michigan, in fact, we're probably going to talk to Tony, and the trophy for the Michigan Mile and an Eighth is as gorgeous. I got to put it up. I was like, it took my breath away. The whole case, not to dwell on you know, trophies that are unrelated to Oak Lawn today. I mean, no double, of course. We've talked about when Dash Goff and Ron Moquette were with us. In fact, maybe I'll put that picture up today as when I put the show listing. I'll find that picture of Dash and Ron from several years ago. But it just everything about the facility is just fresh and classy. They talked about, and I'm sure, in fact, I'm sure Mr. Sella will probably bring it up. They farmed out the spa area to one of the world's leading, you know, spa service providers. They wanted to have the best of everything, and whether it's going to be not just horsemen, but owners when they come to town, this is a luxury that some of the biggest tracks in the country I don't think are going to be able to rival. It's really it's an added dimension. Listen, I love it here. I love some of the threadbare elements of, you know, old hot springs. So, you know, this is really nice and exceptional. But this is a place that has so much going for it anyway that adding this is just a kind of frosting on the cupcake.
Well, downtown seems to thrive on the past. As you go downtown.
Ooh, that's a good analogy.
This is a few miles uptown, and this is the future. So it's nice to see some new building going on here. But this is all done. No more construction in and out. But I can honestly say that when people say, hey, should I come? I can honestly say, oh, yes, you need to come here, and you need to stay in the hotel, and you need to get a room facing the track.
That's true. This is going to be what I did ask. I said, they said, oh, you know, track view. I said, well, I guess the other view is the Stubby's view of Stubby's barbecue on the other side.
And speaking of that, the way to book, if you do want to book a room, because I've been asked over and over, literally, you just go to Oakland.com. The Oakland.com is your gateway to everything. So that's where you go and book the rooms. And if you're coming on a weekend, especially in March and April, you might want to get on it now, because they will book up, and come and see it for yourself.
This we should talk about the sports gambling options that's going to be in the grandstand as well. You mentioned earlier, for those that missed the opening moments, sports tavern area now, and going to be the opportunity to play. To bet the kiosk that I told everybody about the Stony Brook betting Stony Brook last night, those kiosks are amazing. I mean, there's a huge computer screen with all the options, and I expect to make a couple of bets myself today, tomorrow, and,
well, you know,
Saturday.
Because I was, you know, as you're wondering, as you know, racetracks have competition during football season on the weekends, especially now with college winding down in the pros, you know, the last 5-6 weeks. So it's new competition here. But guess what? They brought the competition into the grandstand now. So you can, you know, hit a nice exact and then, you know, go over and bet on the Cowboys or something like that right here in the grandstand. So I think that's pretty cool.
Now, we'll save some of the conversation too. I don't want to take away from Mr. Sella's. I'm sure he's, you know, especially overlooking the grounds because they're excited about what they've done in the infield and what they're in the process of doing in the infield. I mean, the one thing they're not going to be able to do is have a pitch and putt golf course in the infield.
And excuse me, don't bet on the Cowboys. But the idea is to. Have the infield, which was just like an infield, you know. Now they want it to look very nice. So when you're looking out from your trackside room, you see the track. It will look not like a pitch and putt, but it will look like a golf course with the greenery and put a couple ponds in there. Reconstructed three new buildings, concession stands, betting areas in the infield. So when the infield opens in late February or early March, as a reopening when the weather gets good, it's going to be a lot more fan friendly out there than it has been.
Now, it's going to be very, very exciting tomorrow. I can already kind of sense just what we're going to have here, and knowing that it's going to be a glorious day like this, particularly is the all the haze is burned off, and I mean, it is a glorious day. So we're getting excited. Hammer, a couple of things, and let me see. I don't know if Case did. Case said, "Did you bring Tony in, Casey?" I don't know. Not yet. All right, grab Tony quick. We'll slip Tony in. Probably just 10-15 minutes. Before we just don't know if Mr. Salah. Okay, so when we can pull up whenever Mr. Salah arrives.
What about this first Kentucky Derby pool?
I gave a couple of the odds in passing.
What was interesting to me? There were 22 individual horses.
Right,
on the list,
all others, and then they put fillies in fillies as an option, which was
of
intriguing.
The 22 horses.
Yeah,
two of them, one, two, broke their maiden in California. Now they don't have the Baffert horses on here.
Right,
they have one horse from that Mark Cassie sent out, Pop Cap, who's really run well.
Yeah, he's
going to be all right. Broke his maiden at Del Mar, and a Keith DeSorma horse that broke his maiden at Del Mar. My point being. Is that the only horses that broke their maiden in California, or are they all the rest Bob Baffert's? It's rather odd to see a Kentucky Derby list with really only two California horses on them.
That's a good point. Well, the resolution doesn't. No one's really got much to say about the resolution of it of how that. Might play out, and there was the piece that that Jay, and we'll bring it up with Jay on Friday. Yeah, the connections involved most recently, in fact, who was it? Was it Newgrange the other day? The Baffert owners
are
Corniche too, but the Baffert owners are not. You know, they're unperturbed.
It's going to be a hell of a Preakness.
Well, Tony Black is joining us. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I was outside blowing leaves into the gutter, and I hadn't been listening. I guess I missed a lot this morning.
Well, Ron Moquette was with us for the first hour, and we really had a lot of fun. And I'm going to send you a picture. I'll put it on Twitter, too, but I'm going to send you a picture to your phone after we wrap up that invoked, you know, it's Thursday, so we got to get a visit in with you. But in the new hotel at Oaklawn,
right.
There's a trophy case that Dash Goff basically donated all of No Doubles trophies from his unbelievable career. And one of the trophies was for the Michigan Mile. The trophy is so spectacular, and I don't know if it's the has the same look because it was, you know, a handful of years, the mid-60s before my Juliet's win, but the trophy was spectacular, and I took a picture to send to you and I to bring up with you.
The Michigan Mile, I won it by accident on my Juliet, and I have to go look at the picture to see what the trophy was. Because I do, of course, I have a picture of that. But I don't remember what the trophy looked like. But one thing about it, DRC, when it came to Michigan Mile and an eighth, which some people didn't know it was a mile and an eighth, they did it right. I spent a couple days out there and flew back and forth from Newark Airport until the last 2 days I just stayed out there. But it was it's a great memory. And what a great race that is. You know, when you see some of these tracks closing, it's heartbreaking, you know, see some of these tracks that no longer are in existence.
Well, and certainly right by you. I mean, we've talked whether it's Maryland or, you know, Atlantic City. You know, we've had the various opportunities, but this I just sent the picture to you, and I'm going to put it on Twitter momentarily. It's as beautiful. A trophy. It's a pair of horseshoes adorned with rosettes, and a pair of jewels. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I won that race, there was a jock out there that no longer is a jock, and his name's, you know him, Wayne Catalano, doing nothing but good as a trainer. He's in the, I spent a couple days with him out there, and he's in the one picture with me and my Juliet. And I thought to myself, boy, you sure do put that old adage to rest that jocks can't do anything but ride. They can't train. Because he's done so well as a trainer. You know, he probably did better as a trainer than he did as a jock. And he was a good jock. But a lot of memories with DRC.
Well, did you you must be on yourself, so I don't know if you can see the or let me know when the picture, if it arrives, or if it doesn't until after it. We're out at Oaklawn, Tony, for this new.
I see it now. Beautiful, two beautiful horse shoes on a beautiful silver base. It's a beautiful trophy.
Right. Well, you know, that's something, in fact, that's something that listeners are probably curious about. I think everybody knows that the trainer and the jock get a miniature of the Derby trophy, the little gold cup. They get the miniature version of it because that's been, but typically when it comes to trophies, what does the jock get?
You know what? I only have a few trophies that I got, and I'm just looking now. When I won some Merlin Millions, I got a beautiful mahogany base with a beautiful crystal, and it's engraved, you know, and it says Merlin Million. I'm just looking for them now in my trophy case. But jocks don't usually get a lot of trophies. You know, New York would give. Now, these Merlin Million, they were nice trophies. I won the Merlin Million Distaff on Anachronism, and it's a beautiful base with a crystal bowl on top of it. And then I won another race that day for Tim Ritchie. I forget what race it was. That bowl someplace, too. The thing about it is, all the trophies I did get, usually for being leading rider at a meet, and it wasn't necessarily for winning a premier race at that particular meet. But sometimes you got a silver plate. You got some trophies that were miniatures of the owner's trophy.
Right.
But a lot of times you were just glad you won it. And
you got a check.
Yeah.
That's your trophy, is a nice check.
Listen, I won my 4,500th. This is a true story. I won my 4,500th race at Delaware Park on a pickup mount because Jose Santos was named on the horse. I picked him up, and it was the Caesar Rodney Handicap. And it was a $200,000, my $200,000 race. And it was my 4,500th career win. And Christophe Clement didn't like the way I rode the horse. He never rode me again. And he said, I told you to stay on the rail, and you came off the rail. And yeah, and I won by like four or five lengths. And I think I never rode another horse for the guy because I came off the rail. And a couple weeks before that, Santos rode the horse at Monmouth Park and stayed on the rail and come down the stretch with a handful of horses and no place to go. And didn't win the race. But I thought to myself, well, it's still $200,000. It's my 4,500th career win. And I don't care if I didn't follow orders. I won it. And I've got $12,000 for doing it.
That's it. Well, that was for Mrs. Weber, too. And you got the privilege of wearing Mrs. Weber's jacket. Tony, did you ever come out here to Oaklawn to ride?
I was supposed to come out there one year when I was riding in Maryland, and I was riding a horse named Hassie's Image, and they said, we're going to run him in the Arkansas Derby, I guess it was, yeah. And I couldn't go. I was on too many horses, it was a Bowie or Pimlico or Laurel, I forget, but I was riding him, didn't go, and he finished second. That was my only chance to really go out there, and I didn't go, and I'd have been second anyway.
Well,
Hassie's Image. And that had to be in the 70s. And it was for Juan Arias in that year before he won with Caminero the second. The Caminero won the Derby the year before. And this was, I think, the next year. And he had this horse, Hassie's Image. And I was riding a horse named Hassie's Image and Lester's Gesture for him. I won on both of them, but didn't go to Arkansas to ride Hassie's Image.
Well, and since we got the kind of the window here and the opportunity to bring it up, I wasn't sure if Alan Foreman was going to be able to join us, but you bring up Maryland, Tony, and I should use that as a segue to talk about this situation on the main track at Laurel, where they're doing some evaluation, and Alan couldn't join us today. I'm going to be and tomorrow we've got a full slate, but you know, there's been eight clearly a cluster of fatalities since earlier this fall, and
you know, that's not a new situation that's just occurred in Maryland. In the mid or early 70s, they actually did a complete renovation and dug like 12, 15 feet down into the base of the racetrack, because the back of the side of the racetrack, and there's a wet area, swamp and trees and an area, and it was going around the first turn. It finally seeped into the first turn and down the backside, the wet area that is way off of the racetrack. And they had a lot of things that they had to do. I guess it was in the early, mid-late 70s. I don't remember. But I remember I was riding at Laurel, and they had a major renovation to that track. And I don't know what they've done since then, because that's quite a while ago. So if they've kept up with everything, I'm sure, because Maryland does things right. But I wonder where the criticism of the track is.
It's in the stretch. It's on the front side, and it's in the stretch.
That was on the back side, and I think they actually dug down so deep they laid a cement base, you know, and then brought the track back up. But that was on the back side, coming out of the first turn, going down the back side. There was a problem years ago.
Well, and of course they had that construction. They had that issue. Was it last fall? Where they on the apron, and it turned into, you know, turned into a real problem. And frankly, there's been a series of frustrations and difficulties on both sides, not just on the main track, but also on the turf. They had done the work on the turf course, and then were unable to use it at certain, you know, periods this fall. They've been very selective about the use of the turf. So the horsemen, from everything I'm gathering, the horsemen are at wit's end, and there's some uncertainty about the potential to run tomorrow, the next scheduled race date. So we'll and I didn't want to book Alan per se for tomorrow, just because we've got a full slate between opening day here and Cigar Mile Day in New York and so forth. So if we get a window tomorrow to get some details from Alan Foreman, we will. But
you couldn't get a better man to give you details, because he's really up on anything that happens there.
Right.
And you know, this isn't the first time they've been faced with problems at Laurel. And you know, the amazing part about it is the location of that track dictates a lot of the things why they even run at certain meets or run at certain tracks. But one of the best tracks they had was Bowie. It was a great track in the wintertime. It was a pleasure to ride there, and it was amazing how they could manicure and keep that track in perfect condition. And you never heard a problem when it came to the main track at Bowie Racetrack. It was a beautiful track. And, of course, it's not there anymore. It's a training track, and that's about it, I guess. And I have one friend that's still down there that was a rider with me, and we started out around the same time, Vince Percali Jr. And now he trains some horses, I'm sure. He's still training in Maryland. But Bowie was a great race. Maryland, the Laurel track has had problems over the years. Not real close together, but stretched out, they've had problems, several problems throughout the years, whether it be the turf or the main track.
Well, one thing, and in fact, T.D. Thornton wrote a piece at TDN about it overnight. And, you know, when there was that repair, last year and into the winter and into the spring, the opportunity to be able to run at Pimlico was obviously a luxury. But at the same time, they say that it may not be as as simple to, you know, if this ends up being a bigger problem that they can't readily handle in the short term, moving over to Pimlico might be a little bit more complicated at this time of year. So we'll get, Mike Rogers, too. We'll see if Mike maybe wants to discuss it. But the opportunity to be with Alan in person Monday at Arizona is probably the best opportunity to get more information.
Well, I'll definitely be listening because Alan usually has a great opinion about and great info on what's ever going on when it comes to any racing jurisdiction.
Tony, I appreciate the visit and wanted to just to be able to check in, and we'll catch up next week.
All right, Steve, and you have great holidays, and you take care and keep up the good work, and I love you, brother.
Love you, too. We'll talk to you actually from Los Alamitos next week.
Never been there. You have to fill me in.
You can't be everywhere. You went places that don't exist anymore. So
that's the sad part about it. Like I said, I rode at Garden State when it burned down and left through the windows. I rode there when they tore it down, and now I do my grocery shopping there.
Tony Black, everybody.
If it was as busy as a racetrack as it is as a Wegmans grocery store, it would still be a racetrack, I tell everybody.
Good. Well, that's an issue. That's an issue that where property. I mean, look at the Hollywood Park scenario. One of the things that happened over and this is true nationwide, when racetracks were built, originally they were on outskirts of metropolitan areas, and as the metropolitan areas and the suburbs grew, they started to incorporate the racetracks, and the value of the property ultimately in a lot of cases exceeded the value of the property as a racing facility. And that's an economic reality. It just, you know, one of those, but a lot of cases those racetracks were built in spots at the time that were not so valuable, the property. So
it's sad but true. And that's exactly why they no longer exist or are here, you know, because the property became too valuable as something else, as retail.
Exactly.
Hey, you take care, Steve. I'm going to let you go. I've tied you up long enough. Take
it's all right.
Care,
no, it was great. Tony, I appreciate it. Tony Black, everybody. he's so great. Hammer, let me take the opportunity. We've got, we're sort of watching and keeping an eye out for Mr. Sella. But let me give everybody a glance at what we're looking at in New York for tomorrow when we do some serious handicapping. The way the stake sequence came up, the Gopher Wand, and
Saturday.
On Saturday, right. And I'm just looking. Here we go. I'll tell you, Brad Cox brings, speaking of Arkansas, Frank Fletcher and 10 Strikes, Lady Rocket, a major principal, clearly, in the Gopher Wand that starts the all stakes pick four. And suppose that Horacio De Paz with Barry Schwartz, it's got Sharp Star in there. Bella Vita shipping east for Simon Callahan. Simon doesn't do this too often.
You know, he's done it over the years. He hasn't had that great success when he has shipped. He's had those nice fillies over the years. And Kaleem Shaw, his game is anyone. Very good guy that he's claimed for since Bob gave him up. But Bella Vista coming off a nice win in the Betty Grable. State bred. Rare do you see a cowbred, leave California just because of the cowbred stakes program there. So, you know, they must be highly thought of, or they're looking to do some Christmas shopping in New York.
The second leg of that late pick four, the Remsen, the boys, you got Mo Donegal, who in fact Andy invoked in conversation Tuesday for Donegal Racing and Todd Pletcher, the Uncle Mo, the recent maiden winner that looked quite good doing it. George Abreu's got Woohoo That's Me for Al Gold. This is one of Al's homebreds, the Keen Ice New York bred that broke the maiden at Belmont and then stretched out pretty well in the Sleepy Hollow and did it in racehorse time. Butchie Reed brings Eliquist back up from Philadelphia. This is that Nyquist colt. There's a little bit of positive buzz. Zandon in here for Chad and Jeff Drown. This is a Brereton Jones upstart bred first ask winner. Has to stretch out, though, from three quarters to nine furlongs. No small task. Shug's got Don Adams, Judge Davis. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the Remsen field.
I haven't, but, you know, the Remsen going a mile and an eighth. At this time of year. It seemed to always be, well, we got to check that race out for, you know, Derby, because if these horses can go a mile and eighth,
it just hasn't
materialized,
no,
right?
It hasn't.
And but it's nice to see, you know, you got horses. There's a lot of horses out there, like Ron was talking about. They want to run long. And so it's a good offering. It's a grade two in December for these horses that have shown the appendage to go along. So, but it is rather strange that you would think that maybe a horse that can show that early would be able to show that again 5 months later. It just hasn't worked.
No, and people seem to love to beat the Remsen up for that reason. It's very frequently used as a punching bag.
Well, I think you can safely say it's not a Derby prep. I mean, just for the time wise, you know what I'm saying. I don't, even if you had the, and you ran three races, and you did well, you it's not a Derby prep. It's just a mile and it's a mile and eighth race at the end of the year for 2-year-olds. That's all.
Well, and 8-5. For those that didn't see, David Aragona put out last night. He put out the clips of the morning line that he put together for Saturday. Mo Donegal 8-5 in there, and Zandon the second choice 5-2 at the Remsen. The Demoiselle, you're looking at 2-1 favorite for Todd Nest. This is the first out winner from Belmont, going a mile and a 16th. The Curlin Philly for Eclipse and Mike Rapoli out of Marion Ravenwood. And it's criminal that anybody that chooses to buy a progeny of Marion Ravenwood is obligated, or they should be, to use Indiana Jones names. As a result, that should be. I've got a set of rules that I'd love to put together. I'd love to somehow end up as I'm not looking to take Rick Bailey's job as registrar, but I'd love to institute some rules, based on certain names, like the damn policy of truth. It's not right that the progeny aren't all named after Depeche Mode songs and lyrics. I've been advocating this, but same thing for Marion Ravenwood.
I like that. That's good. Yeah. You know, speaking of names, as you handed me the Remsen, I'm looking at the jockeys' names here. And as we go down the list here, a lot of them are going to be going other places. It's a lot of announcements. Irad Ortiz, he'll be going to Gulfstream.
Yep.
Trevor McCarthy, he's
now back.
Was in California for a while, came back. Jose Ortiz is going to stay in New York and ride Aqueduct for the summer. For the winter. You've got Joel Rosario, who will show up here.
Go ahead. Do you want to get that?
Yeah, I'll get it in a minute. All right. But he's going to show up here in January after riding at various places and taking a couple days that he has coming in December. He'll show up here in January. We just, got word that Ron Anderson's other rider, Johnny V.
We talked to Ron.
Headed to California. So a couple of California guys are coming here. Giovanni Franco and Tiago Pierre are going to be riding here at Oaklawn for the meet. So, you know, end of the year, a couple guys changing their locales.
This Demoiselle field, from a morning line standpoint, beyond Nest, this is the that Curlin Philly, 2-1, 3-1 for Tap the Faith. This is the Tap It from Christophe Clement. That was a first out winner at Belmont at the beginning of November, going a mile. You know, and in fact, even today, in the pick six sequence, I should mention, even today, there's the nightcap is a mile and an eighth. That some people should you should really watch what happens today in the ninth, because horses stretching out at as 2 year olds from in some cases 6 furlongs, like we just mentioned with Chad's horse, Zandon, having to go from 6 to 9 furlongs. The you know, this exercise and even you know like here's Tap the Faith is going from a mile to a mile and an eighth. Magic Circle for Rudy out of the Tempted behind Gerrymander, and she feels I'll tell you what she feels like a Magic Circle. Well, 7-2, I was hoping for a little better than that, looking at the morning lines. But Magic Circle, well, logical, just keeps you know kind of going up the scale. But the stretch out aspect really counts for a lot, and you got to make those decisions today in that ninth race, the anchor leg. And I put my opinions up very early this morning. And we'll check, you know, for those that weren't sure, on the turf in New York, weather's been good, and that sequence is really fun. And we should, in fact, when Rich Eng joins us, I think it's Rich Eng's birthday, by the way. So we get to wish Rich a happy birthday later. But maybe we'll get some New York opinions in from Rich. Anyway, the stretch out to the mile and an eighth is, you know, you might look at a horse and think, eh, you know, this horse is a cut beneath, but it's a very different situation when you stretch out. And of course, in New York, where it's so unusual that you know the mile and a 16th distance is still one turn, that's an even you know an even more interesting factor for the horses that are now going to go two turns for the first time, even though they've already been a route. Like I'll give you an example. Look at Nostalgic in here. Nostalgic is 6-1 for Mott and Godolphin. Broke the maiden with a 48 buyer. And so at a glance, you're thinking, well, this horse can't possibly, how's this horse going to compete? It's a very different animal, that mile and an eighth, even for a horse that's already gone a mile and a 16th. So, you know, and I'm just looking at this. I printed out the PPs this morning. It's a crazy number. Mott's 1-25 at Aqueduct so far.
He's just getting ready.
I guess. He's had 9 thirds, actually, and 3 seconds. But so there's been plenty of board hits. But that's a surprising number. And actually, I'm just noticing, too, that Jorge Abreu is 0-15 coming into
Look, Bill has had a fantastic year.
Yeah, yes.
And you have a little bit of a slump. Yeah. Everybody does.
Yeah, well, look at the Asmussen-Keeneland fiasco. I mean, no doubt about it. Then the big the feature, we obviously talked about the Cigar Mile and you know brought it up with both Mig and with Andy Serling. And it here's the way they end up lining up. And it was the 8 that everybody expected. Following C drew the rail. So Following C's got to fire from the rail with Johnny coming out of the Breeders' Cup Sprint, of course. 5-1 for Following C. Plainsman for, speaking of Arkansas, John Ed Anthony. And the flatter 6-year-old from Brad Cox from the 2, 12-1. American Revolution, and you really can't slip any pork chops past David Aragona, because American Revolution, he made the 5-2 favorite, which is, I'm a little surprised that he was that aggressive with the New York bred, but 5-2. Code of Honor from the 4-hole, 6-1, which is an attractive number. Independence Hall and Ginobili are the co-second choices from the 5 and the 6 at 7-2. And then Olympiad is going to leave from the 7-hole, 10-1, which is potentially quite generous. And then 15-1, Rosario, by the way, gets aboard Olympiad. And then Pipeline, that was last seen in the Perryville. And Pipeline, the three-year-old, is 15-1, and Jose Ortiz aboard. And as we mentioned the other day, there's a significant weight spread, because this is an old-fashioned real handicap. Both Olympiad and Pipeline are both, under the conditions, both coming in with 114. And Ginobili has to pack 122. That is not insignificant, Hammer.
No,
and
not.
And you know, I mean, obviously you dealt with that. You dealt with Frankel, so you know what this means.
Yeah, and you know, we've been trying to, you mentioned that, we've been trying to get the bottom weight in a lot of these races. If you'll notice on most of the overnight races around the country, the bottom weight is around 118, as which we're trying to eliminate the overweights in the daily program for the riders. You know, they're a little bit bigger and they've appreciated us raising the bottom. And here in a stake, you know, we're down to 114. Some of these guys are going to have to pull a little weight to do it. There's that age old argument in grade one races. If they make it to that level, shouldn't they be equal weights or should they be equal weight? So I'm not a big weight guy, but when you get up to 8 pounds, it's got to have a little bit of something.
I'm not a huge weight guy. I know you're not either, but that's serious weight.
And so here's Ginobili, who gets punished for winning a sprint. And this is a mile, so rarely do you see that. A lot of times when the mile weights are, say, they usually say non-winners of a stake at a mile or over, something like that. So rarely do you sprinters get penalized in longer races. And speaking of Ginobili, you know, Richard Baltus has been high on this horse since day one. Horse, he shipped him here last year in early April with, you know, maybe some designs on, you know, Derby time. I was thinking about maybe he'll run, win this one other than here. Ran the San Vicente, you notice, at Santa Anita. Came out here, thought he would maybe do all right in an allowance race. We could step him up. And it didn't work out. Had some problems and came back like a rocket ship at Del Mar. And as he said, he maybe ran second to the best horse in the country. Life is good. So Ginobili obviously still doing well for him to ship there, and this mile might just hit him right in the head, 122 or not.
It's a really good, running of this race. I thought American Revolution, I don't know why, I guess I thought American Revolution would be a decent number in here.
What's the price on Following C?
5-1.
That might be me. The one turn mile. I mean, this horse has been through the ringer after those two wins, that maiden win and that super race in his next condition. And the win in the Vosburgh, yeah, it was four horses, but sneaky good look in the sprint, and might be looking to stretch out for sure. That might be me.
Well, it's a great sequence, and for those that like all-stake pick fours, there it is, and the pick five for those that are going to partake. The pick five actually starts with a nice maiden group as well. I guess you just got that call. We got word that actually Mr. Sella is tied up.
Yeah, Wayne Smith's going to come and join us here in a minute, and I thought we'd talk. Since we're sitting next to one of Oakland's premier handicappers, Jeff Taylor over here,
been doing
some work, has been on before. In general, what I learned from Jeff is basically at this track, there's no bias. Rain or shine, there's no bias, unless there is a bias. But in generally speaking, they could come from anywhere. They do come from anywhere, front, back, on a day-to-day basis. It's not like we have a week-long run of horses going to the lead and staying there. It's as a general speaking, when you handicap a race, you're going to get true form.
Yeah, I think that's true, Rick. And, you know, the geometry of the racetrack is pretty uniform. You know, there's nothing like a tight turn here or there. The stretcher moderate lengths both up and back. So, I've been handicapping here for 40 years, and I very, very seldom even think about any kind of bias or advantage or personality that the racetrack presents itself. It's just a non-player in most all of the races. Even when it's wet, when it's dry, it just doesn't seem to matter. And, you know, I've said it before on the show, I think track bias is the most vastly overrated handicap and angle there is. I think it's just human nature to try to rationalize why we fail to pick a winner, and you got to blame something, so why not blame an inanimate object in the racetrack? So, I'm not going to say they don't exist. Obviously, they do. But Oaklawn is one of those rarities, I think, in the business where you can pretty much, unless it just jumps up and bites you, that you can pretty well ignore the complexion of the racetrack.
And another thing, just going along exactly with what you said, I mean, it's going to rain here a third of the meet. We'll have off tracks probably a third of the time, right?
And that's a pretty good estimate. And we'll have the usual thaw and freeze type cycles that we get.
That's what I was going to ask about.
Yeah, and it's not as pronounced as it would be maybe in the northern latitudes, but it does happen. I mean, we missed 14 days of training and racing last year due to that snowmageddon. We don't get 18 inches of snow very often here, but we did last year. So you have to deal with the weather, and I don't want to ever diminish that fact. But even over off racetracks, they dry out, they thaw out. I just don't seem to think there's a discernible advantage unless, again, it presents itself, and as a handicapper, you have to adapt and adjust as those things do present themselves. But by and large, Oaklawn, as I said, is a fortunate for us that it doesn't really have much of handicapping influence in that regard.
Right.
Jeff, how do you anticipate, if there's any change, how do you anticipate the scheduling scenario in terms of who to expect fast out of the gates? For instance, Ingrid Mason historically has always been a fast starter here in January and February. Seems like you look up and she's got five wins by Valentine's Day. Is there any anticipated change, you know, in terms of training arc and preparedness arc that you're keeping an eye on?
Well, I in recent seasons, I think it's prudent to look at the Remington form, because we get a lot of the blue collar bread and butter type horses on the undercard from over that way.
Interesting.
And they have, you know, their meets coincidal now. I mean, they go in through the middle of December. That may be an angle to pursue. You know, this condition book, Pat Pope, our racing secretary, puts it out in October. So it's there. People read it and train toward that book, especially as lucrative as the purses are now. And I think those that have some clients that can go into the claim box and get some live horses, maybe with a condition or two that fits that first book, is something maybe to keep an eye on. And it's a streaky game. It's a streaky game regardless of the level of racing. Anywhere you go, it's about streaks. You get on a roll, I think that confidence translates all the way down to the horse. So, it's something maybe if you get a hot hand early in the season, it may be, again, a good idea to kind of climb on board who has the good hot hand early.
You know, you bring up the schedule change and how it affects Remington. Think of the guys that are coming from Churchill now that used to come here and train for 5 or 6 weeks.
Well, that's my intrigue.
Very, very
to
important.
Get ready. Now they're coming with a fresh horse that might be live. That I got to wait 2 months to run. Now they're ready to wheel right back. So that's one of the dynamics that we might see here.
And on the flip side of that, this has oftentimes been with the November opening and no racing till late January. It's also been kind of a recuperative type period for these Churchill horsemen. You know, these horses have been running all fall long, Keeneland, Churchill. Maybe they do need a break, and that's something. Maybe they've got good-looking form on paper. They've been out 3 or 4 times in the last, say, 2 months. Is that a tired horse? That's just going to be a decision we're going to have to make. That's what makes this early opening so interesting.
And, you know, you talked about Remington, the Remington form here. It occurs to me that there'll be something to watch for in January. Horses coming from here that are going to go run at Sam Houston. And be very curious to see horses from the competition level, you know, what kind of balance we're going to have. Horses coming out of what condition level here may be very bettable. You know, the Keeneland, you know, that's one of the great equations.
Right.
And, you know, you got horses coming from Ohio and from Presque Isle, and, you know, there's that form translation that everybody integrates, and you talk about the front half of the cards. And I brought this up the other day with Randy Moss, where he brought up that. The similarity that we've got allowances and quality maiden races in the second half of these cards, and it reminded me of Keeneland, where the cheaper races, the 20 claimers and so forth, and here probably the Archie bred horses as well, and the front half of the card, it's very similar, but I think there's going to be some very new and potentially lucrative ways to take advantage of what's going to be going on here now and then coming out of here.
Yeah, and it's such a white hot claiming situation here. I mean, how many horses change hands, Rick? I mean, it just happens daily. I mean, we scratch our heads and say, oh, it can't happen again this year. Well, it happens every year for this kind of money, these kind of horses coming from all over with the varying conditions. Pat Pope, the racing secretary, alluded to, is one of the most imaginative when it comes to riding conditions in the business, and he's been doing it a long time. So, you're absolutely right, Steve. How all these horses with these varying type of conditions and how Pat molds these races the way they're written, it's going to be very interesting indeed to see what the class level is. I think the lower end is going to be probably pretty tough. It always is here for this kind of purse money. If you enter a horse that's live for 10 or 15, you're probably going to lose him, so you know you're going to be trying because, you're not likely to bring him back to the barn.
Jeff brings up a super point here. Because most of the races, if you're going to, you know, you're live in, you're not giving them one because you're probably going to end up in somebody else's barn. So these
you want to win.
You want to win now because you want he's going to be gone. So you're trying to get the purse
money. And the money's right. You know, you're going to take an edge. If you're on the fence for a $20,000 animal, you know, you'll drop him to 15 if it fits. And so, you know, you take a 5K loss on the value of the horse, but you're going to make 10,000-12,000 of that back on the purse. So, it's always interesting. And I know this subject is kind of a sore one in some circles, and it's kind of a pet peeve of mine. You know, all this money for the low-end claiming, I know the Integrity Act is supposed to theoretically limit the amount of purse money, but I just can't see that happen, not across jurisdictional lines. And I guess there is such a thing as too much money for a low-end claimer. We saw it years ago. I know Mervin Munez, bless his soul, the longtime racing secretary at Fairgrounds, he would hoard purse money and hold it. And when Oakland started up and those $5,000 and $10,000 claimers started leaving, he would immediately juice those purses up, sometimes to ridiculous levels, $20,000, $25,000. And that was 10 years ago. That was an incredible amount of money.
To keep the horses there.
That was his day-to-day horse, and he would reward those horses that stayed with an incredible amount of money. On the flip side of that positive is Amos and Asmussen would, you know, run a $15,000 or $20,000 animal down your throat for $7,500. They didn't want to ship the horse north, but they were running for a $30,000 pot. So there's our pluses and there are minuses to the amount of money that you run for, especially on the low end. So, I'm not going to be the one that immediately disses the fact that, well, maybe we should limit purse money on the low end because it does really scramble and make things tough. And it does reward the bigger outfits and the deeper pocketed owners in that respect.
Did you ever, in your experience from the racing secretary, did you ever get into a push and pull with another track over that kind of thing?
Well, in the competitive Northeast market when I was at Monmouth, there was, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, New York was the king. They stood above. And then we had Monmouth, which we were second. I don't care what anybody says. But we had Laurel and Penn and all that. And
within an easy van ride.
Easy van ride. And I'll tell you what, a lot of us worked together. If there was a common race in the book a couple days apart and one of them didn't make it, we'd call them up and say, hey, give us your horses. And we'd work that out to get the race to go. Yeah, I mean, you kind of had to work together to get it done. And the purse money was basically the same. So, you know, unless you're able to hoard, and I get that, the only other place where we used to hold money was Gulfstream, and that was basically to keep people there at the end in the old days. You know, they would wait, and then the last 2 weeks just pile it on that. And that, you know, it's a business
decision. It's a matter of survival sometimes. Absolutely.
And, you know, like you say, for an outside agency to come in and tell a track kind of how to disperse their money, I don't know if that's good. Are they going to tell us how much to sell popcorn for? I mean,
free market enterprise, right?
Yeah. Well, hey, Jeff, looking forward to checking in with you for some opinions as the season progresses.
Well, actually, I say this has been home for me for a lot of years, Steve. It's just a pleasure, and you know, there's just no other place like it. It's just the environment, the feel of racing. I think the 3 day a week is a good idea. I know everybody's trying to find that sweet spot when it comes to pleasing horsemen, pleasing your fans, and you know, the metric with the casino and the hotel. Now it's just a big grand equation that you have to find a happy medium in there for everybody. But gentlemen, it's a pleasure as always. I'll relinquish my seat to the distinguished Mr. Sell at this time. Great talking to you guys.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Jeff Taylor, who's an institution around the game, and particularly right here at Oaklawn Park, and in terms of you know, an institution since 1904. Oaklawn. Can't call it Oaklawn Park. It's Oaklawn Racing Casino Resort, and the Sella family. A pleasure to have Louis Sella join us. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Great being here. Great for you to see a little part of what we do here in Hot Springs. It's sunny, 75 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. December. I guess, too, right before we opened, and we're going to sign on the dotted line right now to keep it this way until May 8th.
You know what you might be able to do? You might be able to have an apple dumpling now and then the apple blossom
exactly.
in April.
Exactly. We're all new to this, so you never know what's going to happen.
Talk about the perfect segue. Talk about this conceptually, and I'd love for you also to talk about your father and the legacy and the concept of how this facility and the town, because the town comes with the facility, how this evolution, revolution has really occurred.
Well, we've been very fortunate. And since 1904, when we first came here to Hot Springs, at that time, in that era, legal bookmaking was permitted. So the name of the game was to get kind of weekend fair tracks. And our family at that time had several tracks throughout the United States, you know, over 30, that ran weekend meets that permitted them to offer legal bookmaking. And then you transitioned that from my great-grandfather and great-granduncle, Charles Sella, Louis Sella, to their son, nephew, John Sella, my father's dad, who really started turning it around into the love of the sport of horse racing. And that's what kicked off really our love and passion to grow Oaklawn. My father came around when his father passed away in 1968-69, and he's always had a passion. I think to answer your question directly, we have a passion for horse racing. It's easy to get up in the morning and go to work. If we lose that, and I think we've seen that in other tracks, other jurisdictions, we're fortunate that my father had a passion for horse racing. I have a passion for horse racing, and so we get to keep going forward. And that's where we're headed. And that's the core. If you believe in the sport, and if you believe in what we're doing, the other things are easy. Building buildings and creating atmosphere is easy if you can build around what you love and what you're really passionate about.
We noticed in the tour yesterday, we mentioned it earlier, that all throughout the facilities here, the casino, the hotel, the lobbies, the restaurants, horse racing is everywhere. And I think that's what kind of sets this apart. We had someone mentioned this morning about like parks or Delaware, where they put the casino over here and the racetrack's over here. This is all one. You can't go anywhere walking around here without horse racing being part of it.
You're right, and that's deliberate. And we started that really with instant racing. With our first foray into gaming with instant racing, now called historical horse racing, we started it in 2000. But we never wanted to lose touch of what we are and who we are, and that's horse racing. So we never created a quote-unquote casino floor or gaming floor without always remembering people who we are. What do we have on the other side of the door? And that's horse racing. Today, even today, when you walk onto our gaming floor, we have the original instant racing sign in the middle of our game floor with a horse that's neon and bright. And we constantly remind people, look, we have something that's pretty neat just on the other side of the door. Go check it out. And you'll see during our racing meet, it's a river. During racing, during a live race, you'll see a river of people coming out of the casino to go see it. And then after the race, you'll see the river going back into the casino to see what's going on. And it's quite unique that we're all under one roof.
I would love for you to talk about the instant racing for a minute, because the concept and... I've made this reference as things proliferated, particularly in Kentucky. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, the HHR concept has stabilized and saved Kentucky's signature industry. And it the reference isn't made enough that your father's concept and everybody that made that happen, because it was laughed at initially, that it was the whole concept was just, it seemed silly that, oh, we're going to take results of former races and we're going to create an algorithm into a slot machine. Talk about making that happen, because it's been a godsend.
It has been and has saved racing. There's a wonderful saying, you do you and I'll do me. We've never really focused on other people. When we came up with the idea of historic horse racing, instant racing, we went to some quote-unquote leaders in the industry on the East Coast, West Coast, and they did laugh at us. And they said, well, this is a silly concept. And we hired a law firm out of New Jersey to look at racing laws to see what would be the most favorable state to try this silly thing. What could we do? And frankly, Maryland was number one on the list.
Interesting.
But they said because of the politics in Maryland, you better not go there. So we went to Arkansas. Simply, that's how we ended up here. And because we thought we wanted to go to the most favorable state to see how we could kick it off. And Arkansas was the number two. So we did come up with the concept. We brought it in here in 2000. We had one game called Thoroughbred Mania. We had two 25 terminal pods, if you will. One was smoking, one was non-smoking. And we turned it on and held our breath. It started to work, and it really wasn't until maybe 2003 when our purses started increasing. And we had horsemen coming to Oaklawn and say, well, all across the United States, racetracks, purses are declining. Why is Oaklawn's increasing? And why is attendance increasing? And why do we see racing in Oaklawn going upwards while everywhere else it's going down? And we said it's very simple. It's called instant racing. We had a buy-in from the horsemen. We had a buy-in from the commission. We went to our governor. Everyone was holding our hand because, frankly, at that time, racing nationally was going in the wrong direction. And we're sort of fighters here in Hot Springs, and we don't go down easily. So we decided we're going to fight, roll up our sleeves, came up with the concept. And it turned it around, and it did save racing at Oaklawn. It saved racing in Kentucky. You've seen it
proliferate.
Virginia. And the foundation all started right here. In Oaklawn, we've been known to be innovators here. We started with instant racing in 2000, but people forget the very first interstate simulcast with merged pools happened right here. Happened in 1989. People forget about that when we're in the Midwest and we talk about Hot Springs. But when tracks could race like Oaklawn for 60 days but were closed for 300 days, we needed a new revenue model. So how did we do it? California, Florida, New York, they had intrastate simulcasting, but nothing across state lines. So Dad and our lawyers and Mr. Dutcheswaz and his lawyers got on the phone. and had to struck up a deal. And we took the summer of 89, Arlington Park's card, never been done before, again, held our breath. The next year, enabling legislation, we passed it, and throughout the United States, today it represents over 90% of the parimutuel wagering in North America. Started right here in Hot Springs, just like instant racing.
And to juxtapose that, and you can probably address this better than anybody, there's that heritage of daring, innovation, and given the history of this town, in the face of legal restriction, versus what has always been or always was kind of this expectation or assumption of that Oaklawn's very stodgy and old fashioned, and they won't even do rolling daily doubles, and because it we'd always heard that your dad was kind of hesitant to offer too many wagering options.
Well, that's right. I don't know if this is even a term, but we were progressive traditionalists, if you will. we were willing to try some things, but on the other hand, on the racing front, we were traditionalists, and we still are. We still don't want to blanket the wagering menu with all sorts of gimmicks. We still believe in win, play, show. Here's another idea that we created. Not an idea. It's a wager that we put in place, 5, 7 or so years ago. It's called the Show Bet Bonus.
Yeah.
It's only here at Oaklawn. I do not understand why other tracks don't do it. But the gimmick of this, the neatness of this, is that we've lowered the takeout from 17% on a show bet, and we've lowered it to 10%. If you wager on track at Oaklawn on our races. So what does that mean? Well, now you have the churn. So we're growing that, and we're letting people constantly bet and get money back. And that's the name of the game. You're not burning them out, because we have $2 bettors here. You go to our club, which we're going to have a little bit over 400, 500 people here tomorrow. They're $2 bettors. They're here to enjoy the day, enjoy horse racing. They're not gimmick bettors. They're not here betting hundreds of dollars. They're literally betting $2 to show, and we're going to reward them for that. It's all about entertainment, and it's about having fun for the entire day. That's the name of the game.
And
knowing
the customer,
your customer.
Yeah. And that, and when you came out with the show bet bonus, the accompanying press on it was that you had analyzed the on-track wagering patterns, and you saw this anomaly versus the rest of the country, where there was this gaudy show money that was being bet, and you said, "Well, all right, this is who they are, and let's push this." Frankly, that concept about understanding your player and understanding where the handle is coming from, and I'm not applying it to the show bet, but in general, the rest of the industry could take a hint from that. We aren't cognizant enough of what the player wants and needs.
I think that's right. Again, we try to lead by example. We don't pound our chest. We don't, even though I'm on your show. we like to lead by example, and there's a reason that we average about 12,000 people. We'll go up to 60,000 people on our derby. Our focus, and it's been multi-generational. It's the family. It's to have a hot dog, come in the infield, have a Coke, enjoy the sport of horse racing. We're selling horse racing. We're not selling gaming. We're not selling fancy hats and how good you can look on a weekend. We're selling entertainment for family and friends to come back weekend after weekend. We don't care if you bet. We want you to grab a hot dog. Don't buy anything.
Come and enjoy.
Water.
Take it in.
Bring a blanket. Sit on the apron and enjoy horse racing, because we believe in the sport. We believe that if you look and see the pageantry of horse racing, you're going to be sold. And that's what's going to bring you back. And we've been very successful with that here.
Well, you've stressed, since I've been here 3 years, You're starting to stress quality now in the horse racing and using that theory. So now we've expanded, what, 7 more weeks into December to give that fan at 3 days a week to come out for the weekends. But you didn't increase the days dramatically for the purpose of keeping those purses at that $700,000 a day. You mentioned that. That's much more important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could have gone to 90 days, added, you know, it's, but then we'd be giving away less money, and the quality maybe wouldn't have been there. So stress that with the extra added weekends that we're keeping the purses high to get
that
quality here.
I think many jurisdictions sort of lose sight of that. We have always believed in get the highest purse you can with a boutique meet like a Keeneland. We try to emulate Keeneland as much as you can. If, in fact, if you look outside, we have the fall colors just like Keeneland fall. This is a first. But we do have $700,000 a day. Hopefully that'll be up. But I think what's important, and this is where we're very fortunate here in Arkansas and in Hot Springs, we are in lockstep with our horsemen. We have the best relationship with our horsemen, I suspect, than anywhere else in the United States. We don't have any agendas. Everything's on the top board. It started back in 2000 when we had a fork in the road. One led to success, one led to closure. Today, our agreement with our horsemen extends something like 10 years. We're so happy with what we have, and it's working. And we don't see infighting. And we have our racing commission, chaired by Alex Lieblong, who understands horse racing and likes horse racing, and are most importantly, hands off. They say, management, horsemen, get together and figure it out. We're not going to inject ourselves. Boy, are we lucky in Arkansas. And when I travel the U.S. and go to these various commission meetings and symposiums, et cetera, I come home and thank heavens every day. Boy, are we lucky here in Hot Springs to have that relationship, because it doesn't exist anywhere else.
And you talk about Alex, who is just I'm gonna just guess. I mean, his background and his business interests are basically parallel with your family as well. And on that topic, I'm very curious. How old were you when you kind of recognized what you were going to be doing long term?
Well, it's been a transition. You could not come to the track until you were 14, and you had to be accompanied with an adult. Dad would sneak me in when I was about 8 or 9, and I'd kind of hide behind his coat jacket, and he'd sneak me in. Everyone, of course, knew what was going on, but I was too young. I thought I was really being crafty. I was mucking out stalls when I was 15, I came through really up the ranks from there, working through the various departments. So it's one of those that I've always been involved with it, and I'm not going to shy away from that. I've always been involved with it since I was a kid. But working through the ranks, seeing the people, and that's so important, seeing the people in the various departments, and enthusiasm from the horsemen to the grooms, all across to the custodial people to management. We at Oakland have always focused on competency, honesty, no agendas, and team effort. And that was easy to embrace. And so I have always been focused on that, and I just happened to fall into that. I started young. In fact, Dad had a meeting, and my very first job, I think I was about 11 or 12, I hot walked for Hans Mancuso in the backstretch. He was an old timer out of Louisiana that went over to Kentucky, and Dad had to leave in the morning, and he said, "Go over there," and I got my cowboy boots on, I got my hat on, and he would tell me to walk, you know, 3 times around the shed row and count 10 sips and don't give him 11th and just keep walking until I tell you to stop.
That's good.
You if you're rounded enough, it starts rubbing off on you.
Well, your experience, because you, as is so often the case when it comes to family, especially around racing, you got that foundation, you went out in the world and made your way and then, you know, are back. And it feels as if, you know, given your other interests, your legal background as well, and, you know, that you were so well positioned for this next future of this generation. You know, talk about the future and what else, you know, beyond what is obviously established with the, you know, the casino and the hotel. How do you envision, you know, the next couple of decades?
Well, fortunately, we offer a very diverse business. When you look at when my father started just with horse racing, then we had simulcasting, instant racing, ADW, and then you go all the way across to gaming. Now we're in the hotel business, spa business, event business. It's a little bit of everything. So it keeps you on your toes. And I will not for a moment tell you that I know what in the world we're doing in every category, but boy, do we have some great people in those departments that have experience that we get to rely on. They've done it before. So where are we headed? I think this is a terrific model for racing. If jurisdictions are able to get an alternative revenue source, be it instant racing, be it casino gaming, whatnot, if you put it under one roof, if you create, quote unquote, a resort, which we now have, which we now call ourselves, something that you can stay on property and have a really nice dinner, go to the spa, see a concert, and by the way, see really good horse racing, all in one day, and never, that's pretty neat. And I think that's going to feed off of itself. And we really believe, our future is very bright with that. Very, very bright. We started some time ago. We've even done some things, this past year in the middle of COVID that we deliberately did. It didn't put on the back burner because we know it's a slow time, because of the pandemic. But more importantly, we wanted to position ourselves that, when COVID is over, and it will be over, we're going to be on all cylinders. And that's where we are today.
From a town and gown standpoint, obviously, as this racetrack has gone, it's elevated the town, and you can feel the pendulum. I mean, this town's got a fabulous history, and for anybody that wants to read about it, David Hill's The Vapors is highly recommended.
Yes.
How can you interact and help the town essentially, you know, keep moving forward in this clearly what is going to be a new era? It's always been a tourist attraction, and it's always been a gaming hotspot. Talk about Hot Springs and your, you know, the interactivity with the track and the town.
Well, Hot Springs is Oaklawn, and Oaklawn is Hot Springs. Simple. Period. Stop. We are one and the same. Interestingly, I was actually at a Rotary function yesterday in Hot Springs giving a talk, and in researching that, I found an old speech that my father gave Rotary in the spring of 1987, and the topic was the interdependency of Hot Springs and the Oaklawn Jockey Club. Boy, is that so true today.
Amazing.
Today. And frankly, that relationship has never been stronger today. Before, and I say before, when we have a 100-year-old facility, we talk in decades. But before, there was always a bit of a friction between Oaklawn and the city founders. Today, boy, we are in lockstep, because if we grow, they grow. If they grow, we grow. We are together. And that's the name of the game.
It's amazing you say that, because there was a period. It seems to be over now, but NYRA dealt with the exact same problem in Saratoga,
right,
where there was this bizarre, you know, anti racetrack sentiment in a town that was a complete threadbare mess in the 70s and has enjoyed this unbelievable renaissance,
right,
because of the racetrack. And it took the last, I'd say 15 years to put that to bed.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, Hot Springs and Saratoga Springs, the commonalities
are just
incredible.
They're absolutely
incredible.
The same. And unfortunately, you also see some negatives when you go up to Arlington Park. They had their frictions. They never really overcame that with Arlington Heights. And even Santa Anita, in the what is that, Pacific Palisade? I can't remember the town that they're
Arcadia.
They've had their frictions, and I'm not so sure they've ever really overcome them. But I'm not worried about that. We worry about Hot Springs. We worry about Oaklawn. And when it comes to Hot Springs and our city managers, they are great. They support us. We support them 100%, and we are very, very fortunate.
Looking outwardly, though, I do want to ask what messages you think the rest of the industry should and can and should take from what's gone on here.
Don't lose sight of what we are. We're a racetrack. We're horse racing, the sport of kings. Act like it's the sport of kings. If you do that and are true to that, the other things will follow. Sell the sport of horse racing. That's what we do. We've been successful. I don't know if it'll be successful in other jurisdictions. It's successful here in Hot Springs. Oaklawn is going in the right direction. And for many decades now, our focus has been selling entertainment that evolves around horse racing. Pure and simple. That's our core. And if others can focus, perhaps, on horse racing, keeping food and beverage low, pricing low, giving them alternatives, you can get in and out of Oaklawn. We got a free gate. We own our food and beverage, so we keep our prices deliberately very, very low. You know, you can get in and out for $2 for a bottle of water and enjoy a day of horse racing.
50-cent corned beef sandwich
50-cent
tomorrow.
Corned beef. We're going to go through six tons of corned beef tomorrow.
Saturday.
Saturday. You know, no one does that. And so we have fun doing that, and we get to have fun doing that.
Well, I can attest to that after being at a few tracks this summer, where literally friends went to the track and you asked them the next day, how was it? And all they talked about is how much the beer was.
Right. Right.
As opposed to they might have hit the double, but they're talking about, oh, I paid $12 for a beer.
Right.
That's not the experience you want when you leave a racetrack. You want to talk about the races. And here, when you leave Oaklawn, usually you go into town, but you talk about the races that day. You know, the food has nothing to do with it. And when you, as I've lived on both coasts, the pricing here is phenomenal. You don't even think about it. You have money to bet, and you can bet. You don't waste it on food. And
well, and that's the name of the game. And other tracks don't have that luxury. We have that luxury, so we take advantage of that luxury. And I think another part that is so important, and that also has to do with Hot Springs, is when trainers come here, Wayne Lucas is an example, Kenny McPeak, who's coming back, they'll go into town to restaurant. People come up to autographs. They know who they are.
Yeah.
You don't really get that in other jurisdictions. But when the trainers come in, they're superstars. The Beatles have come into town.
Yeah.
And that's what's fun for them, I think, also, is that they finally get to go to a fun town where they're known, they're respected, their privacy is respected, but when they want to cut out and give an interview or walk the streets, people are saying hi to them. You don't get to see that very often either.
That part of it, you know, Saratoga, you know, there's a handful,
yes,
there's a handful of places.
That's
there's
right.
Delmar, Saratoga, Keeneland, Oaklawn, where it's just... It's part of the fabric.
That's right.
Hammer put up a thing on Twitter the other day from the newspaper. And
daily workouts,
are in the newspaper.
In the local paper.
The
Sentinel. If that doesn't show... you know, an arrangement between the town and Oaklawn Park.
Well, and it's in a statewide. We also get it with the the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, which is the statewide paper.
Yeah.
Wally Hall, the sports director editor, is a huge racing fan and a good guy. And Bob Weisner, who's local Sentinel Record, and Pete Perkins, who writes for the Democrat Gazette. And we're very fortunate to have, for instance, Mary Rapolini on the Daily Racing Forum,
yeah,
that loves Oaklawn and loves horse racing and doesn't have a grudge and doesn't have an edge and loves to see Hot Springs because Mary is so thoughtful and understands horse racing so much. She goes around. She sees how special this is. And you can read it in her words.
You've got Prodigious Bay and the new Shadwell acquisition.
That no one can pronounce.
it's unbelievable. Lamutinati.
Lamb.
Lamb for short. You got two shots on Saturday.
We do. We're excited. I have a couple of horses to keep our name involved with horse racing and to keep it here and to keep it when we travel to Kentucky in the circuit. It reminds people of Oaklawn, and that's what we're excited about. We have a couple of shots. Ron Maquette is a super trainer, and we'll see what kind of job he does with these horses coming off the shelf.
Well, and you're looking to extend a win streak because you had Wobrejad win at Remington the other night.
Well, as I reminded, or rather, Jason, our VP of racing, he said we're already on the watch list because he hasn't raced for 180 days. I said, please have several eyes in hands touch the horse to make sure we're good. Joking aside, Ron's a great trainer. He never put a horse in jeopardy. They're going to be fit. They're going to be ready to go, and we're looking forward to it.
Well, the plant is fit and ready. The new property, you and your wife, Rochelle, from what I understand, involved in so many of the decisions to make it accommodating to, you know, the kind of audience that you're hoping the casino, the resort brings to Hot Springs. And it really, you can really feel it. Just a spectacular.
Thank you. It's fun. When I say that I think we have a right formula, people ought to visit, for instance, the Bugler, a new restaurant, which is on the first turn. You can eat out on the patio, kind of like a Saratoga, and see right there, literally on the track, in the first turn bar. And again, we're constantly re-emphasizing horse racing, the Bugler, first turn. And when you have racing, it's all focused on the track side. It's not focused in any other direction. It's all focused on the track. That's the name of the game.
Well done. And Luisella, best of luck for a fabulous meet, this new era for Oaklawn Racing Casino Resort. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Luisella joining us. And Hammer, really, as you intimated and hinted for weeks leading up to being here for the kickoff, it just... Everything just feels right about, you know, the way this thing is starting.
Well, you can understand why people say, well, you're going back to Oaklawn? Yes, I am. And you can understand by the feeling. I love horse racing. Oaklawn loves horse racing. Hot Springs loves horse racing. So why would I not come here? And I'm going to get more and more people that I haven't been there yet. Guess what? They're coming, this meet. And you can understand the love of the game. And you know, that's why we're in it. We love the game. We had Ron on this morning for an hour. And, you know, he's the same way, Ron Maquette. He loves the game. The trainers back here, they love the game. That's why they come back here, because they feel the love coming from the management side of it. And so it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, for me too. I've come for Rebel Week. I've come for I think two or three Rebels and two Arkansas Derbies, and I'm on my way to Arizona for the symposium, and I thought, how do I not miss this, the opportunity for this new opening day tomorrow. Let's do this. Casey's going to get Rich Eng, and we'll get a couple of opinions from Rich on this Aqueduct Pick 6 sequence. So let's take a break. Last of the morning, we'll come back. Rich Eng joins us after this. We're live at Oaklawn. Stay with us.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back about a little less than 10 minutes to close out the morning, and typically wouldn't have taken that late break like that, but wanted to be able to say goodbye to Mr. Sella. I really appreciate it. I never got the opportunity, unfortunately, to have his father, and so really appreciate it. Lewis Sella visiting with us. And in fact, he answered a question that I had kind of toyed with asking, but I didn't. His son, named after his father, Charles, his son is entering the business too. I was going to say, what's the next generation? And there was a Lewis Sella, two back, and then a Charles. Now there's a Lewis, and there's going to be a Charles again. So an amazing, amazing legacy of one family owning this racing oval. Unbelievable. Rich Eng is standing by, and I want to go over some of the spots at Aqueduct with Rich for this $68,000 carryover, and it is a terrific race sequence. But the first order of business, I think, is to wish him a happy birthday. Rich, happy birthday.
Hey, thank you very much, Steve, and a lot of your listeners have already been sending me social media birthday wishes, so I appreciate that, and I'll take this moment to thank all of them for thinking of me and taking a few seconds to send me a note. I appreciate that.
Nice. Let me ask you quick, Del Mar closeout, how'd the end of the meet go?
It was really good. You know, the ship and win program that they instituted many years ago has been successful. I know Santa Anita just sent out a press release that they're going to continue it, because it does bring additional horses in and keeps them here, too. So you want horses coming out to bolster the field. I thought the racing was fine. Obviously, it was the Breeders' Cup meet, so that really made it extra special. And except for the one snafu and, the last race on Friday, the Breeders' Cup was fantastic. They did a great job hosting it.
Well, the action turns to Los Al. I know you'll take a couple of weeks to relax and get fresh for Boxing Day and the start of Santa Anita. And Rich's analysis for the Southern California circuit picks up when things get back to Santa Anita. But in the meantime, got about 3 or 4 minutes, Rich, and I want to see what you think about anything between the 4th and the 9th today at Aqueduct, given this very nice sequence and the 68,000 that starts the pick six carryover.
Well, I looked at all the races, but I only have stronger opinions on a few of the races.
That's all right.
Let's go to the Let's go to the seventh race as far as, you know, one of my horses I kind of like. In the seventh race, I kind of put a circle around the number 11 horse, Girl Dad, 8-1 in the morning line, Javier Castellano riding for George Weaver. But this horse has taken a slight drop in class, has a proven commodity on the grass, and I just thought might get the right setup. 8-1's a real square price. Those are the kind of horses you want to come in to be separators for you. So that was a horse that I liked in the seventh race, the 11 Girl Dad. And then in the eighth race, I have another 8-1 shot that I like, Steve. And I should have asked first, is everything still in the grass at Aqueduct?
Oh, yeah. No, grass is fine.
Okay. The number 2 horse, Space Launch, I probably don't expect 8-1 because you got Christophe Clement and Manny Franco, but this horse has put together a good string of turf races. I think it should be well spot, should get a real good trip. So I like the 2 Space Launch in the eighth race. And if I could take one more gander in the ninth race, a horse that I kind of like a little bit, was another 8. I have 3 8-1 shots, didn't even realize that. But it's the number 6, Constitution Lawyer. I thought this horse got a good education first time out. Had a couple of issues during the race, but I think this horse could be real interesting in the price for Ray Handel in the ninth, number 6, Constitutional Lawyer.
Well, at least with 2 of the 3, I'm on board with you. And Constitution Lawyer, one of my two, my second choice. I ended up putting Dr. Levy on top in the nightcap. A very interesting. To me, the mile and an eighth, I brought this up in reference to the way the field came together for the Demoiselle and the Remsen, you know, stretching horses out to 9 furlongs, 2-year-olds. And, you know, there's horses you look at in this field and you think, ugh, I can't like this horse. I'll give you one crazy horse in that scenario. Mm-hmm. Courvoisier, on the outside, for Kelly Breen. I mean, this is a horse that's cut out, to be a nice horse and does seem to be moving forward. Shug also has got, that Citizen Mac at 8-1 that seems to be moving forward. And if you want to project a price, it's the 9 furlongs. That's the separator. And there's going to be horses stretching out here that are going to start to burn, late and start to really tire. Then there's going to be horses that are going to keep plodding along at the same pace and that can get the money that at first glance they don't seem eligible. So Space Launch, too. I've got Space Launch as a C in the pick 6, but a B on the pick 5. The horse now you got me concerned about is Girl Dad. So my analysis is up and the scratches affected very little. The only major horse that came out of anything was that buck or two from Michelle Nevin in race 5. Otherwise, the fields are completely intact for the most part. There was a 30-1 and a 50-1 that got scratched. So it should be a terrific sequence. Rich, thanks for this. Happy birthday. Many more, and we will talk soon.
Hey, thanks, Steve. If people have learned from history and our past shows together, if they box your picks and my picks,
that's true.
There's a pretty good chance of cashing.
Exactly. Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick on Twitter. And thanks to Rich. Thanks to Mr. Sella and to Jeff Taylor as well. Tony joined us and Ron Moquette. If you missed anything, pick it up on the archive, the podcast, or the replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. Thanks, everybody. Back with the big weekend preview in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.